There is apparently a law in operation this week in America that you can't give a speech in public without beginning with Big Bird. So now that that's out of the way, I want to elaborate on what I actually told you that I would speak about in the Torah study session earlier. And if you weren't here at the Torah study session earlier, then you came late. But I spoke about the fact that we read the Adam and Eve story over and over and over again, and yet, like all great stories, and like the Torah in general, each time it yields a slightly different understanding. And I want to offer one understanding of the Adam and Eve story, but first, I want to remind you of what actually happens, because when you know stories well, they tend to slip from memory, and if you go back now and you reread stories that you were told as a child, you realize that somehow memory has made them fuzzier, less accurate, less sharp. Sometimes you switch details or characters. What happens is that God creates the world, and in one way or another creates a man and a woman. There are actually two different accounts of how God creates a man and a woman. In one account, God creates them simultaneously. In the other account, the woman is somehow extracted from the man, from his rib, from his side, really. But in either case, and that's another sermon, you've got a man and a woman in a garden. And God says to them, "You can eat anything in the garden. Anything you like. But there is a tree," which actually turns out to be two trees, "in the center of the garden, and just those don't eat. Just those." Not 5 minutes go by when what happens? The snake comes and says to Eve, "Is it true that God said you're not allowed to eat from this or touch it?" Now, of course, that's not what God said. God didn't say anything about touching it. God just said you can't eat from it. But the rabbis imagine that what the snake does is he goes up to the tree and he touches it and he says, "See, no harm done. Have a bite." But however God persuades Eve, Eve takes a bite of the fruit, which, by the way, nowhere in the Torah does it say that it was an apple. That's actually based on a later Latin mistranslation. And in fact, the rabbis, among other things, they give a couple speculations. They assume that it's a fig. First of all, because later on, God sews clothes from fig leaves, so we know that there were fig trees in the garden. And second, because really, if you're going to give up paradise, and I say an apple or a fig is slightly more exotic. So there was a famous French gourmet named Brillat Savarin who said, "Oh, you first ancestors of the human race who gave up paradise for an apple, what would you have done for a truffled turkey?" But at least as far as we know, Adam and Eve were vegetarians in paradise. And whatever fruit it was, Eve ate it, and the moment she eats it, she thinks, "I better get Adam to eat this, because otherwise I'll be in this alone." So all it says is she gave it to Adam and he ate. First of all, this gives you some image of Adam. You know, he comes home after a long day in the garden, sits down at the table, and whatever she puts in front of him, he doesn't say, "Geez, dear, where did you get this today?" Adam is basically a bump on a log, uninquisitive. She puts it in front of him and eats. Then, of course, they get scared. And they hide, which tells you also, in some ways, how primitive they are. They think God, who created the world and made us and put us in the garden, if we crouch behind the bush, he'll never find us. And God asks the first question in the Bible, which is, "Ayeka, where are you?" And Adam understands this not to be a topographical or a geographical question. Adam doesn't say, oh, I'm here behind the bush. Instead, Adam says, I was afraid because I ate. In other words, I'm in a place of fear. That's where I am, God. And God says to Adam, because you did this, there are going to be consequences. And what does Adam say in the noblest tradition of men everywhere? God says, Adam says, Eve gave me the fruit. This woman that you put by my side, she gave me the fruit, and I ate. Don't get too proud, though, ladies, because God says to Eve, why did you do this? And she says, well, this snake, which you put in the garden. In other words, it is a human tendency to want to pass off blame, equally distributed among men and women. The snake, unfortunately, has nobody to blame, the poor snake. So the snake gets cursed. He's got to crawl on his belly, and he's got to eat dust. Fine. Eve will have pain in childbearing. Despite that, her urge will be for her husband. In other words, despite the fact that the process of giving birth, which is true in the ancient world, is dangerous and perilous and so on, she will still want to be with her husband and to bear children. And what happens to Adam? Adam has to work for his bread. No more trees bearing fruit. You've got to actually do something in order to survive. And then Adam and Eve get expelled from the garden. But of course, God doesn't destroy the garden, which is what you would think God would do. If you never wanted Adam and Eve to return to the garden, the logical thing to do is to just wipe it out. But instead, God stations Kruvim, those are sort of angelic guardians, and a spinning sword in front of the garden and says, here it is, but you can never get there. And therefore, for the rest of their days, Adam and Eve and all of their descendants, in other words, us, we are wanderers in the world, in an imperfect world, where in fact people will suffer, people will die. They will work, sometimes productively, sometimes unproductively. And it all seems a result of that one act where they ate the fruit. There is, however, another way to see that action. In Greek mythology, there's the myth of Prometheus. And Prometheus, too, does something to defy the gods that he's not supposed to do. Prometheus goes to heaven and he steals fire and brings it back to earth. And fire, which is the great creative element and represents not just literal fire, but passion, creativity, and so on, Prometheus brings back to earth for human beings to use, and as a result is punished in terrible ways by the gods. If you want to know the terrible way Prometheus is punished, just in case you don't have enough bad images in your head from movies and television, what happens is that every day a bird comes and pecks out his liver, and because he is immortal, it regenerates at night, so he has to go through it again the next day. Yes. It is the dental appointment that never ends. That's what it is for Prometheus. Every single day, back with the drill, in the shape of the beak of a bird. But here's the thing. In Greek mythology, Prometheus, even though he suffers immeasurably, is seen as a hero. But in most of Jewish tradition, Adam is not seen that way, and Eve is not seen that way. They're seen as people that ruined it for the rest of us. But when you read the story, you feel that this is a setup. I mean, what parent says to a child, listen, I'm putting a cookie in the middle of this table and leaving the room. You can do anything you want in the room, but don't eat the cookie. And then walks out and expects that when they come back, the cookie will still be there. As opposed to a child who will have chocolate on his chin saying, I didn't eat it. I didn't. I don't know what happened. And that's what God does to Adam and Eve. God says, enjoy. If he had kept quiet about the trees or hadn't put them there in the first place, they never would have eaten them. But instead, God says, anything you want, but that one right there that you see right in front of you, don't touch, don't eat. Now, remember that God puts two trees in the center of the garden that God instructs them not to eat. One is the tree of knowledge, Eitz Da'at Tov V'Ra, of what is good and what is not good, and the other is the tree of life. And here's the amazing thing. Given a choice between eating the tree of life and eating the tree of knowledge, which one do human beings choose? They eat from the tree of knowledge. Now this puts the story in some ways in a very different perspective. You can see Adam, or Eve, better Eve in this case, since she's the first one who ate, you can see Eve as Prometheus. That is, she doesn't want to lead an empty life forever in paradise. What the snake says to her, after all, is, if you eat from this God, you'll be like a god. And in some ways, the snake is telling the truth. Because what defines God more than anything else is that God knows everything. And we know so little, and Eve wants to know. We say that pride goes before a fall, as though really her sin is pride, but in some ways you can see it as curiosity. Eve wants to know. She doesn't want to just sit in the garden day after day and eat figs or apples. She wants to know. She wants to learn. She wants to grow. And that analogy is true throughout our lives. Every parent knows, yeah, there's a part of you that would like to keep the kid at age 5, at home, safe, with the bumpers on the furniture, and the gates on the stairs. But the better part of you wants the child to grow, and to make mistakes, and sometimes to be hurt, and to learn, and to realize what the world is. And even though that's painful, you know instinctively that it is better than staying at home forever. And when we see Adam and Eve leave paradise, we realize we're about to have an adventure. They're about to go off into the world. Terrible and wonderful things are about to happen to them and to their descendants. There are going to be siblings and sibling rivalry and fights and journeys and plagues and slavery and liberation and a promised land, and all of that is only possible because Eve said, yeah, let me see that piece of fruit, I'm going to eat it. So in some way, the story is the story of Prometheus, which is the possibility of growing and changing. And that's why Shabbat is one day of the week. Think about what the Jewish tradition is saying to us. It says, one day of the week, have peace. You should have peace. It's important to have peace in your life. But if you tell somebody to have peace on one day of the week, what are you saying about the other 6 days? That you should, in fact, struggle and learn and grow and change and work and all of that. That's part of what life is about. And if you think about the Torah, the story of Adam and Eve is just one very tiny section. And then you go on to all the rest of the story. And that idea, the idea that in fact what we seek in this life, if given a choice between peace and growth, is growth, it's a very Jewish idea. Daniel Boorstin, who was for a long time the Librarian of Congress and is a historian, He asked the question once at the beginning of one of his books about the great discoverers of history. He says, why is it that technology triumphed in the West? He says, after all, you know, early on, the Chinese invented gunpowder and paper. But why is it that technology stagnated in Eastern nations and became dominant and triumphant in Western nations? And he says part of it is due to the legacy of the Greeks, but more, his conclusion is, because the Jewish people introduced to the Western world the idea of a creator God. God was a creator, and human beings were supposed to be like God, which means you can't stay in one place. You can't rest in the garden. You have to go out and be restless and change and grow. I can give you two Jewish authorities, very different, who said the same thing. My friend Joseph Epstein, who says he has known sad Jews and happy Jews, but one thing he has never known is a contented Jew. And Shimon Peres said the same thing. Remember when he has said this a couple of times, but I remember he said to the group of rabbis when we visited that the greatest Jewish innovation was dissatisfaction. This restlessness, this sense that things should be better, that there's always room to change, to grow, it's profoundly rooted in our tradition, and it begins this morning with Bereshit. God makes an unfinished world, and we have to finish it. God puts us in a garden and tells us, don't do this, because if you do, you're going to lose the garden, and God knows what human nature is, and right away, we go for the tree. So I know that there is a philosophy out there that really you should be peaceful and contented. You should be happy only with what you have, and striving will just bring you stress, and that is true. But striving also grows the world and changes things and makes things better, even though sometimes, yes, it makes things worse. And even though it's true, sometimes we wish people would just stop inventing new things when we just learned how to work the old things. Really, you don't want them to stop. You want us to continue to do exactly what it was that Adam and Eve had to do the day they left the garden. Because do you know what the first thing they do is when they leave the garden? The very first thing. They bear a child. In other words, they knew, this is a new world. We have to make new things. We have to renew. We have to be creative. We have to grow. And so do we. Shabbat shalom.